Marty Kaley, Celtic music from across the globe and across town. I'm Dave Baghdad, and I'm so glad you could join us. On tonight's special program, we'll have a conversation with Danny Carnahan of Wake the Dead. Thanks for being here. Cade Mela Falcha, you're very welcome here for this 205th edition of the Kitchen Party Kaley. I'm your host, Dave Baghdad, and we have a great show for you. Some things you may know, and a lot you probably don't. We've got a special program for you this evening, one I've wanted to do for quite a while, and tonight seems like the time to do it. You'll recall that last week we had our theme Third Sunday broadcast featuring the music of Turlough O'Carolan, which I hope you enjoyed as much as I did, and we have another full show treatment this week. Our theme Third Sunday shows for July, August, and September are already spoken for with things we do every year at those times, and I don't want to wait till October for this one, so we'll do it now. Tonight, we've got an interview with Bay Area singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and author Danny Carnahan. You know, one of the perks of this program for me is that every once in a while, I get to speak with someone I've admired and of whom I've been a fan for a long time, and this is one of those occasions. Before we talk with Danny, let's start with some music, shall we? We'll first go back to 1984 to a record called Journeys of the Heart, a duo album he did with Robin Petrie, about whom we'll hear more later. This track, though, just features Danny on fiddle and octave mandolin, a medley of a jig, the Coleraine, into two reels, Green Hills of Glentown and Maids of Mount Kisco. We'll follow that with a song from Danny's most recent album, Sky in Your Pocket, right after we hear some tunes on the Kitchen Party Kaley. Thank you.
I learned that true love would always throw me. Catch a glimpse, feel my heart break now and then. Now here's you, and honey, you don't even know me. Ah, but here I go again. In your eyes, there's the faintest hint of laughter, hanging there like the chorus of a song. And the words, oh, I could swear I heard them somewhere, or I've known them all along. Free a single word and let it fly,
fly my way, fly my way.
Cast your glance across me like the sky,
fly my way, fly my way.
Mere gravity can't hold me down today. I could float if you moved in my direction. I could soar if you motioned me to stay. I could plunge to my death without redemption if you turned and walked away. Could you freeze while I wrestle with this feeling? Could you shine half as bright as you appear? Can't you see how I bump against the ceiling? How I hover when you're near. Free a single word and let it fly,
fly my way, fly my way.
Cast your glance across me like the sky,
fly my way, fly my way.
And mere gravity can't hold me down today. If I were a bird, I might ring it to you. If I were a bell, I might ring it to you. Here inside my shell, there's not a thing that I can do. If I were a bell, I might ring it to you. Here inside my shell, there's not a thing that I can do but stand mute in fascination, hoping you finally notice I'm around. I'm the one with that look of adoration, floating slightly off the ground. A single word and let it fly,
fly my way, fly my way.
Cast your glance across me like the sky,
fly my way, fly my way.
Mere gravity can't hold me down today. Not today.
A couple of tracks there featuring Danny Carnahan, our guest for the evening. That was Fly My Way, a song written by Danny and featuring him on vocals and octave mandolin. This selection comes from Danny's most recent solo album, Sky in Your Pocket, from 2011. Before that, we went all the way back to 1984 for an instrumental medley beginning with a jig, the Coleraine, into two reels, Green Hills of Glentown and Maids of Mount Kisco. This set appears on Danny's duo album with Robin Petrie, Journeys of the Heart, although we just heard Danny on fiddle and octave mandolin on that one.
This portion of the Kitchen Party Kaylee has been made possible by donations from the Friends of the Kitchen Party Kaylee, and we thank all of you for your support. If you'd like more information on how to be a friend of the show or to make a donation to help us stay on the air, please contact us via email, Twitter, or Facebook. And as always, thank you for your help.
I mentioned that I actually got to chat with Danny recently, and you'll hear that in a moment. It's a fairly lengthy bit of tape, so I've interwoven some music into it. Without any further ado, here's part one of my chat with Danny Carnahan, exclusively on The Kitchen Party Kaylee.
Well, this is a great pleasure for me to be able to welcome you to our humble airwaves.
Well, it's a delight to be there.
So you've got a lot of stuff that you've done over the course of your multifaceted career, but maybe you could tell us first how the music originally entered your life.
Well, the music, let's see. Well, I'm sort of a sui generis musician in my family. My parents were not musical, and so I sort of spontaneously outed myself as a musician very early on and started plucking on neighbors' pianos and then whining about wanting a piano until my parents got me one. And then my father found a tenor guitar in the closet when I was about 7 and showed me 3 chords, and that was all she wrote there. Any further attempts by him to teach me math failed because I was already shooting in the other direction. But my first experience with Celtic music as a genre, as distinct from any other kind of music, was in 1968. I was visiting cousins out in Wales, and we were listening to a pirate radio station, Radio Caroline, broadcasting in the Irish Sea, and I heard the Irish hit parade out there, which at that point included the Dubliners and Danny Doyle, and it just got me. And I went out and scrounged up both of their albums, and when I came home, I learned every song on both of those albums and just never looked back.
And it wasn't too long into the early 70s before you were starting to perform yourself.
Oh, yeah. I was singing casually from then on. I got out of high school in early 1970, hit the road with a guitar, spent 4 months hitchhiking around Europe, and made it to Ireland and spent a fair amount of time in the UK playing in folk clubs and running into people that I didn't know were famous back then, like Martin Carthy, who showed me a bunch of alternate tunings and turned my head backwards. And then I grew up in Marin County, north of San Francisco, and in the 60s. Genre distinctions were pretty arbitrary, and everybody sort of threw all music into the same blender, and it came out in various ways. And so I was playing with rock band and bluegrass band and a country swing band and singing my own stuff and just, you know, having a ball. And my college roommate and I started writing songs, really bad songs, which I hope no one ever hears, in about 1972. But I was actually getting paid to play by 75 in a band called The Little Big Band. But then in about 1977, I started hooking in with Chris Caswell at the Renaissance Fair, and he was in the Scottish crowd, and he played like 12 different things, and we just had a ball together. And so we got together with a room full of instruments and started working out some fun stuff, and ended up being a duo for the next 4 years. Yeah, that was when I kind of turned pro.
And from your start on guitar, you've since added fiddle, mandolin, and I would venture to guess that you were probably one of the early people over on this side of the Atlantic to incorporate the octave mandolin.
Yeah, you could count us on one hand back then. We all knew of each other, although I didn't know. Like Roger Landis was sort of the guy in the Midwest in Missouri. We never met face-to-face for the longest time, but we finally did 10 years later. Yeah, there were very few of us. There were very few of them in Ireland at the time. When I got my octave mandolin, I bought it in Dublin in 78. Again, it was blind luck, and just being in the right place at the right time, I was able to hang with people like Andy Irvine and Johnny Moynihan and cop some licks off of them. And boy, did that change my world. And Andy was daunting, amazingly daunting. Planxty was the Beatles of the modern Irish revival, after all. I've knocked around and run into Andy over the years from here to Ireland, but a wonderful fellow, easy to talk to, incredibly generous, and one of the real cornerstones of the modern Irish movement. Because California hadn't heard any of these guys before, I was sort of the leading edge. I managed to culturally appropriate a whole lot of the unbelievably cool things that were going on in Ireland and bring them to California, and everybody heard me play it, and they say, gosh, he's great. Well, I'm not great. I just found these before you did. You know, we were very zealous about, you know, getting them out there and sharing them with the world.
And on the subject of incorporating things Irish, you also came across Mick Fitzgerald.
I met Mick, again, in 78. I met him the night before I bought my octave mandolin. It was May of 1978. And he was singing in a band called Tipsy Sailor with Johnny Keenan, who was the younger brother of Patty Keenan, and another wonderful singer-songwriter named Kieran Halpin. They were playing at Slattery's Bar, which is now, sadly, no longer a folk club. But he was up there. I just kind of wandered in, innocent as could be. And there was this guy singing with this band and singing songs he had written. And it was such a galvanizing, world-changing experience that by the end of the evening, I just decided two things. One, I wanted to do exactly what he was doing. And two, I wanted to get to know him really well. So within a couple of days, I was over with a six-pack of Guinness at Kieran's girlfriend's house or something. And we were just sitting in the living room, and Mick was sharing something like 25 original songs with me. This incredibly innocent, generous act, and it changed my life. There's no two ways about it. Because Mick was sort of clueless when it comes to the business end of things, he hadn't bothered to copyright any of his songs. So I said, well, at least I can do is protect his butt. And so I copyrighted everything that he had written up to that point and have been paying him royalties from then on till he died last year.
And you've continued to record his songs 3.5 decades later.
Indeed. You know, well, Mick and I stayed in touch. We kept tossing songs at each other back and forth. I am honored to say that he recorded one of mine a couple of years ago. And, you know, he would send me songs, either really nice ones or amusing ones, depending. And I've performed several, and I recorded one of the new ones called The Ballad of Cable Street on my last solo album that came out 5 years ago now. Yeah, his writing was always really amazing and heartfelt, and his lyrics were so evocative. There's a reason why stereotypical Irishman is a talker. I don't know what it is about growing up in Ireland. You learn to express yourself verbally with grace and invention, and when he sings about Dublin, it's almost like you can smell it. It's so evocative.
Well, let's play The Ballad of Capel Street, written by Mick Fitzgerald and performed by Danny Carnahan, right here on the Kitchen Party Cayley.
Saturday down with old men in the bar, talking big money, holding on to a star. And the name of the horse is a wing and a prayer, and he's gonna do it this time. And the dirty old river goes crawling away from the cold heart of morning to the end of the day. Just once in a lifetime is all that it takes, and he's gonna do it this time. And the world's spinning round on the poor side of town, a street carnival with a merry-go-round. He moves through the streets, he studies the form, and he's gonna do it this time. Oh, Saturday night, blowing papers around, no dreams to be found. He's drunk by the river, he's close to the ground, singing some song to the wind. A song of the street with a voice wearing thin. It bounces off windows, 3 sheets to the wind. Just once in a lifetime is all that it takes, but he didn't do it this time. He sings alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. Won't know in the morning, but that's how it goes. He sings alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. But he didn't do it this time. He sings alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. Won't know in the morning, but that's how it goes. He sings alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh. But he didn't do it this time. Thank you.
That was The Ballad of Capel Street, written by Mick Fitzgerald and performed by Danny Carnahan, which appears on Danny's 2011 album, Sky in Your Pocket. If you're just joining us, we're focusing this evening on Danny's work and career, so let's get back to our chat, exclusively on The Kitchen Party, Kaylee.
So Danny, when you first came to my attention, it was part of your long-standing duo with Robin Petrie. Tell us how that came together and talk a little bit about that musical relationship.
Well, Robin and I got together in college. We were married in 77. So our first trip to Ireland was sort of a deferred honeymoon trip. And back then, she didn't actually play an instrument, really. I mean, she played dulcimer and stuff and a little guitar when we first got together in college. But in the pubs, I was there with the fiddle and just flaming along, you know, 3-4 hours a night, drenched in Guinness in the pubs. And she would usually sit there knitting or just chatting with whoever sitting next to her and listening. We did that for, like, I don't know, 3 years. And then after a while, she expressed interest in the hammer dulcimer as an instrument. And so I said, oh, why not? So I had a hammer dulcimer made for her and gave it to her for Christmas. And, you know, she looked at it, and she tuned it up, and started playing it. And it was like she'd been marinating in jigs and reels for so long that they were leaking out of her ears. And so in very short order, she had hundreds of tunes in her repertoire. And, of course, we started playing music together. So when Chris Caswell and I parted ways for various logistical reasons, and we stayed friends, of course, and played back and forth until he died. So I sort of traded Chris in on Robin, and then we hit the road, and we started touring. We toured and recorded from about 1983 through 1996.
You mentioned earlier about how musical borders were really kind of meaningless, and that was certainly the case on the records you did with Robin. You've got classic English folk songs, all sorts of various Breton and ethnic tunes, Irish stuff, of course, and even Grateful Dead covers.
That's right. Well, again, various Celtic varieties. The membranes between them are pretty porous, and in Ireland, every Irish band in the 70s and 80s that I ever knew of played Breton tunes, so we learned some Breton tunes, and we traveled to Scotland and around England, did a couple of tours over there, and so we covered a lot of territory and met a lot of people and heard a lot of amazing songs that sort of compelled us to learn them and perform them. I got to New Zealand as well. We came back with some amazing songs there that we loved dearly. But the Grateful Dead was kind of interesting. We lived in Marin County, so we kept like running into various people that worked for the Dead. And so at one point, we decided to record a song called Deal that Jerry Garcia had written with Robert Hunter. And so we recorded it, and then I did the legal thing of sending them a copy and sending them royalties, which is like enough to buy lunch, considering how many we'd sold. But what was interesting is that Jerry remembered it, and I met him a few years later backstage at a Dead concert, and I said, you know, I recorded this song, you know, a couple years ago. He said, yeah, what was that? And I said, yeah, Deal. He said, oh, I remember you. You actually paid us. You sent me a check. I said, well, how the hell do you remember that? And he said, well, you're the only one that did. So being a scrupulous business person, you know, paid off there. And then I met Robert Hunter through somebody else in the Dead organization, and he and I collaborated on a song for an album we did later.
Well, Danny, I think at this point it'd probably be a good idea to play some of the classic tracks from those records with Robin. We'll go ahead and play that medley of Farewell to the Gold and Loser. And then I think an instrumental track as well, Flying. So tell us how that tune came about.
Oh, that was the era when everybody was making fistfuls of money packaging up instrumental music as New Age. And so we said, that's interesting. New Age music, I don't really have the faintest idea what New Age music is, but people are willing to buy it if it's called New Age music. So let's do an instrumental album, in this case, keep our yaps shut, and do an instrumental album. So we just kind of sat around with our instruments and kind of experimented with melodies and shapes and textures that seemed to work with the octomandolin, the guitar, and the hammer dulcimer. And that just kind of all kind of spilled out onto the floor in very short order, and we recorded it, and it was a Chicago company called Flying Fish that snapped it up, and it actually was marketed as a New Age album, more than a Celtic album, and did reasonably well. I think we got a Grammy nomination for that one.
Well, let's give those a listen right now on The Kitchen Party, Kaylee.
Somewhere around, for it's somewhere.
guitar drones drive valley all over. Old Jimmy Williams and me, they were penning the dust on the winding shot over. So we headed down. Drinking that wine, I can tell the Queen of Diamonds by the way she shines. Come to Daddy on an inside street. Oh, well, I got no chance of losing this time. Oh, well, I got no chance of losing. Thank you.
You're listening to The Kitchen Party Kaylee on WICR FM 88.7, Indy's only homegrown Celtic music radio show. We're featuring Danny Carnahan this evening, and we just enjoyed a pair of tracks from the duo of Danny and Robin Petrie on vocals and hammered dulcimer. First, from their 1989 album, No Regrets, we had a medley of Farewell to the Gold and Loser, the latter a Grateful Dead song. Then, from 1987's Continental Drift, we heard Flying, an instrumental composed by both Danny and Robin. And now, let's get back to our conversation.
So, Danny, one of the things that I definitely want to discuss with you is your most recent projects, which are very near and dear to my heart. And I'm speaking, of course, of Wake the Dead.
Yes, Wake the Dead. Well, we started referring to ourselves as the world's only Celtic all-star Grateful Dead jam band. It's sort of grown into a Celtic Summer of Love band these days. I'll get to that in a minute. But in 1999, I was at a party with, among other people, Paul Katopish, a wonderful mandolin guitarist who I knew socially, but had been playing with Kevin Burke in a band called Hillbillies from Mars. And he was sort of like, you know, scary, talented, a little daunting. And then also Maureen Brennan, a harp player who I played casual gigs with for some time and knew very well. And so I was talking to Maureen's then husband about this thing that I just discovered. I said, well, gosh, I was in the living room. I had the Grateful Dead cranked up, and I was kind of pacing in circles with my fiddle. And I found myself playing a reel along with China Cat Sunflower, and they just worked together. They all interlocked, and it was kind of a cosmic moment. And he looked at me and says, hey, you should go talk to Katopish. I just had the same conversation with him. And apparently Maureen and Paul and I had independently been discovering little intersecting spots where Celtic music just seemed to slide so easily and organically into Dead songs. And so we got together around the table one day, and we just started playing, and within about 2 hours we had enough material for an album, and we looked at each other and said, we've got to record this. And so we used that sort of impetus as an excuse to put together a band with all the people that we'd always wanted to play with, including Joe Craven, a fabulous percussionist. Well, he can play anything, but he was our percussionist. And Sylvia Harrell, the singer who I'd known of for years, but also was, you know, one of these lofty individuals that I'd never found a way to kind of crack her socially. But I called her up and said, hey, I got all these really cool songs that you might like. And so I took my guitar over there, and she apparently never heard like a note of Grateful Dead music, and which it turned out to be a great thing. Don't come in with any arrangement expectations. You're just gonna, you know, freeze you up a lot. But I went in there, I played her some songs, and she just looked at me and said, those are such beautiful folk songs. Why haven't I ever heard them before? Well, because if you doll them up in tie-dye, they're Grateful Dead songs. If you strip the tie-dye away, you get these just astonishingly well-constructed and lyrical folk songs. And their essential folk nature is what makes Wake the Dead work. You don't have to really shoehorn tunes into these songs. They just sort of pick a key, and something will just come to your fingers. And so we just were in the right place at the right time, and we recorded that, and I knew some people who worked in the Dead office, and I dropped a demo CD off one day saying, what we did, you know, just expecting to be sociable. And then 2 days later, the head of Grateful Dead Records at Arista said, we want to sign you on Arista, and would you like to open for Bobby Weir at the Fillmore? And I didn't dare say, well, the seven of us have actually never been in a room together, and we have never performed live, but of course I said yes, because when someone says, do you want to play the Fillmore, you say yes. And so I hung up the phone, and we all scrambled around and try to figure out how to perform the stuff live.
Well, you obviously found a winning formula, because nearly 20 years later, you're still at it, and in fact, you've got a brand new album out.
That's right. We're in our 18th year, and, you know, we're all getting, you know, older and grayer and more grumpy, but it's still the most fun band any of us have ever been in. And, yeah, our fourth album came out last October called Deal, and it's the one that we pretty much recorded live in the studio. We found a studio that was big enough to put all of us in, you know, some line of sight, and we just ran it live, vocals and all, and that energy was what we were looking for, and I think we got it. Why don't we do, just for my personal sake, and I think we need to play something from Sylvia, I would say Dark Star, because Dark Star does something that the Dead never did. They medleyed things together in every which way and never did the same show twice, but they never took Dark Star into the Beatles. We did that.
Well, let's give a listen right now on the Kitchen Party Kaylee.
Thank you. everything you want. And your bird can't sing, but you don't get me. You don't get me. You say you've seen seven wonders, and your bird is green, but you can't see me. Proud possessions start to weigh you down. Look in my direction. I'll be right. I'll be right. Sound there is, and your bird can't swing, but you can't hear me. You can't hear me.
We're visiting tonight with Danny Carnahan, whom we just heard on a couple of selections from Wake the Dead. From their 2016 album, Deal, we heard the medley of Dark Star by the Grateful Dead into a Beatles song, And Your Bird Can Sing. Let's rejoin my conversation with Danny exclusively on The Kitchen Party, Kaylee.
We're continuing our chat here with singer, multi-instrumentalist, and author, Danny Carnahan. Danny, thanks so much for being here. And so what is it with the books that you've written? You have a Celtic theme to those books, don't you?
Yeah, I wrote a series of three murder mysteries some time ago now, but I just had a ball doing it. I just had this idea of a scene in a pub appealed to me one day, and I just kind of sat and wrote it down. And it was so much fun to do, I just kept writing. At the time I was touring, I was running into Brian McNeil of the Battlefield Band just all the time, and he was around with like an old coal-fired laptop, and he was doing the same thing. He was writing his first novel about a fiddle player in Germany, and I was writing about a fiddle player in San Francisco. And so we would sit around and giggle and try to make bets on who was going to get done first. He beat me. And it was a darn fine book called The Busker, which is really impossible to find now, but if you can find it, get it. And so I wrote the first one and then failed to get an agent and then said, well, that was so much fun, I'll just keep going. Because some of the agents said, well, nobody's going to sign you if you're a one-trick pony, so show that you can do more. So I did another one. I still didn't get an agent. And then I did another one. And right about that time, I had a kid, which pretty much eliminated the time and the bandwidth that I had for spending days and days alone in front of a keyboard. So my line now is, I'll write number four when my kid goes to college. But yeah, we had fun. I sort of invented a character named Sweeney, who's the fiddle player, and he just gets himself into jams, and largely his wife, who's a college professor and really the brains of the outfit, named Rose, she helps extricate him from the problems. I just had a ball doing it, and I just figured if anybody else enjoyed reading them as much as I enjoyed writing them, that was just gravy. So I put the first couple through an outfit called Ex Libris in Philadelphia, and then the last one just came out a couple years ago through Amazon. The first one is called A Jig Before Dying, and that takes place in a pub in San Francisco. Nasty, nasty bit. And then Sweeney and Rose go to the west of England for the second one, and it's called Fortune Turns the Wheel, titled after a wonderful song that I learned from Robin Williamson. And then the third one is With His Dying Breath, which takes place in a sort of alternate universe version of a Mendocino Woodlands music camp I've been teaching at for more than 30 years called Lark in the Morning, but it's not Lark in the Morning in the book. But if you look hard enough and you've ever been to Lark in the Morning, you probably recognize some of the characters.
So for those who are interested in learning more about your recordings, your upcoming performances, and the books, what is the best way for people to follow you?
Well, we've got the two websites, DannyCarnahan.com is all me, and then WakeTheDead.org is the band, and everything is sort of interlinked and blinking elbows, and if you go to one, you can probably get to the other pretty easily. And yeah, pretty easy to find. We just survived a malware takedown of the Wake the Dead website that we've been rebuilding, so I think it's back up 100% now, but if anything peculiar comes up, like if you receive a message in Japanese, we missed something. But other than that, yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Well, Danny, this has been a very, very great pleasure and a longstanding ambition of mine. So thanks so much for taking the time to be with us, and we wish you the best of luck in all of your many endeavors.
Well, thanks very much. I'm going to keep playing music as long as I'm breathing. So we're just hoping that I'll have more stuff to share with your listeners down the line. And hello to everybody there in the Midwest. I miss you.
My conversation there with Danny Carnahan, singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and author. I hope you've enjoyed our detailed focus on this very unique and special Celtic musician. We're getting near the end of our show for today. I hope you've enjoyed our time together, and I look forward to having you join us again next week. Reach us by email at kitchenpartykaylee, that's all one word, and Kaylee is Ceilidh, at gmail.com, by Twitter at @KPC_radio, or through our Facebook page. You can find podcasts and playlists from all of our shows at iTunes, Google Play Music, TuneIn, and at kpc-radio.com. For our final track this week, we'll hear one more from Danny Carnahan and Robin Petrie, Frana Vals. Until next time, I'm your host, Dave Bagdad, and I thank you for listening. We'll see you here again on Sunday at 10 p.m., right after the folk sampler. Slán ogat. You've been listening to The Kitchen Party Kaylee on WICR 88.7 FM. We hope that you'll join us again next Sunday at 10 p.m. The Kitchen Party Kaylee is written, produced, and hosted by Dave Bagdad and was recorded at EMAS Studios in Broad Ripple. The Kitchen Party Kaylee is a Fortnite production. Thanks for listening.